Support for the Media Project comes from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a new Bachelor of Science degree in public health with a focus on social, physical, and behavioral sciences. strose.edu. From Northeast Public Radio, this is the Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
The Media Project is underway, an opportunity for you to have a half hour of commentary, analysis, and perhaps even some insight into the media issues of the week. I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union, here today with Dr. Alan Shartok, the CEO of Northeast Public Radio.
Who has his Santa Claus hat on.
He does, and looking dapper indeed, sir.
Right.
And here next to me is Judy Patrick, editor of the Daily Gazette in Schenectady.
It is wonderful to be with you both tonight.
Well, it's great to see you, absolutely. On a chilly time of the year we are here. Do you know what significance July 27th might have?
Yes.
Yes.
It's 2 days after my birthday.
Well, isn't that wonderful? I'm very happy to...
July 27th of this year or any
January
year?
27th of this particular year. It was 2 days after my daughter's birthday, too. How about that?
You have the she same and I birthday. Are on the same birthday?
Isn't that something?
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Isn't that cool? Absolutely.
She's I'll have to remember.
She's a little cooler than you are, Alan.
So January. January 27th?
No, July 27th.
July 27th.
That was the date of the last press conference by the president-elect Donald Trump. In the time between election and taking office, George W. Bush conducted 11 press conferences. Barack Obama conducted 16. Donald Trump was to have had a press conference on the 15th of December to announce how he was divesting himself of his business interests. He decided not to do that. So no press conference. However, we have had about 1,400 tweets from Mr. Trump in that time.
Yes, and I thought he was going to also be discussing Melania's role, and the tabs are all saying as we speak that Melania has been downgraded. She's staying in New York, and Ivanka is going to be playing the role, at least have the First Lady's office.
Really?
In the White House and the East Wing, don't you know? So that's interesting because, and I suspect, that there's going to be a lot of interest in Melania's background, how she came into the country, whether she did what she was supposed to do in terms of immigration, everything. So I think she's being downgraded. Or as Donald Trump might say, you're fired.
So July 27th is a very long time ago, and this is mid-December now. That does not bode well for the press corps and its ability to ask probing questions of the next president.
I think that's exactly right. And you know that none of the traditions of the media and the president are enshrined in law. There's nothing that says that there needs to be an office for any reporter close to the president, for example. He could just say, no reporters in the White House except when I ask you in. Nothing to say that he needs to have any press conferences or he even needs to have a detail of reporters. What do you call that?
The guys that shadow them.
Cool. Mm-hmm. There's nothing to say that he has to do that.
So does that press corps really do a valuable service, that day-to-day standing outside the door? Now they're standing outside the elevator at Trump Tower and watching who goes in and who goes out.
Right.
But that's only part of the
suggesting,
job.
Judy, are you suggesting that they're a bunch of indolent butt kissers?
No, I am not suggesting that. But it is an interesting thing. I think a press conference is a valuable event. Regular people get frustrated by these events because they listen to a reporter ask a question 10 different ways. But the reason they're doing it is because the person answering the questions is often evading or sidestepping the real issue.
Imagine.
But you know, the average person doesn't know that. And that, you know, creates this impression that the press is a bad guy.
Yeah, because we're like going after these people. Yeah.
So correct me if I'm wrong, because Trump does have a war with the press, we know that. Did I read something that there's a suggestion that legal advertising would be taken away from...
That's a state-by-state thing. Battle underway right now in the state of New Jersey, which some people are calling Chris Christie's revenge against the press. They're trying to remove legal advertising, and that has been suggested sometimes in New York State, and it would be, for a lot of little newspapers across the state...
A kiss of death.
It would indeed.
So tell me what legal advertising actually does.
Well, if you're a local government or a state government, either way,
you're required by law.
You're required by law to put announcements of contracts that you're letting or big important things that you're going to do. You have to buy a little ad in the paper, and it's the tiniest print, you know.
If you're old like me, you can hardly
read this stuff. And almost nobody reads them, but some people do. I mean, actually, there is a new contest category coming in the New York State News Publishers Association contest that will be an award for reporting that originates with legal advertising.
Yeah, I'm a reader of legal advertising. And in fact, it's the one kind of classified advertising that Craigslist can't take. But this routinely does because state law requires it to be published in a newspaper of local circulation.
No. A weekly and a daily in each county. So, for example, a weekly and a daily.
Mm-hmm. I wonder what that's all about, that they divided up the spoils and said,
well, because in some areas you're not really served that well by a daily. So, for example, you can have, if you're the town of Altamont, you might want to put it into the Altamont Enterprise.
Well, just playing the devil's advocate for a moment. Most people don't read the legal advertising. Judy does, but she's not like most people.
But she's acting as an agent of most people. She is, on behalf of her readers, scouring that stuff so that she can find stuff that needs to be exposed.
Well, but Chris Christie, in his magnificent girth, has decided that what he wants to do is to put it on the internet, which is free, and they don't have to support newspapers that way.
Isn't that nice?
Is that the best you can do?
Well, you know, there is an argument to be made that putting it online is another way of disseminating this really important information, but there will always be people who don't have access to the internet, and this has always been a good way of getting that out to the average person. I mean, I'm an advocate for keeping these legal notices in print as well as online.
Well, Judy, fewer and fewer people actually have their hands on newspapers, except that they can get the newspapers online. And so if you get it online and read it there, my reasoning is, why pay?
Well, here's the way it works in New York. The New York News Publishers Association has established a free website that it maintains on behalf of the state of New York so that all of these legal ads do appear online, and the state pays nothing for that.
Yes.
And that is the deal that the news publishers made in exchange for the state not taking away these contracts that reach people in all these little corners of the... And besides, you know, the amount of money involved in legal advertising is minuscule. For local governments, for the state government, it is really de minimis. But if you run a little paper where your margin may be a couple thousand dollars a week, you don't want to lose that.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong. Am I wrong that at one point...
Yeah, probably.
Am I wrong that at one point the mayor of Albany got so angry at your paper, the Times Union, that he decided he was going to move the required legal advertising to the Jewish World and the Catholic Tablet?
That is correct. He did.
Did it work?
Well, here's how it worked. He removed the legal advertising in a dispute over the property taxes for the Times Union plant on Sheridan Avenue, which is near the Palace Theater in downtown Albany. Never thinking that the, quote, Albany Times Union, as it was then called, would abandon the city of Albany. However, Hearst...
And go to the upscale, you know, sort of
Hearst had
white part of the town.
The white part of the town, right. Well, that time, that part of the town was all white. But Hearst had already bought property out in the town of Colony in an old potato farm alongside what was then being built.
Is that the word
potato?
Potato. You mean potato.
No, potato.
What do you mean, potato?
Okay, that's where the orchestra practices.
Sorry, go ahead.
So this is But I digress. So the Times Union said, oh, yeah? Well, I can't actually use the language they probably used at that time, but it's like...
a couple of asterisks.
Sue me, I'll sue you. And so they moved out to the suburbs. And the legal advertising, yes, it's correct, did go to the Evangelist and to the Jewish World instead. The Times Union
moved to Colony. That was a get-even move, yes.
That was a what?
A get-even move.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. And actually, it's a good thing because it took the Times Union away from its focus being entirely on just Albany and made it more of a regional publication there in the middle of the capital region. So that's good. How about that?
And the big issue here is that government is pretty powerful, and they can do many things to make the press's job harder, and what you have to do is be brave and strong enough to stand up to them and say, okay, we'll take this hit, or we'll fight this hit, because we have a bigger job to do. But it happens from them withholding documents to us, to not letting us go to press conferences or not holding press conferences. You know, traditionally we haven't done is made a big deal about it on our pages or in our airwaves, but I think we do need to do that more and more going forward.
Absolutely. You know, to that point, you ask a question about how valuable really are these White House reporters, and it's a valid question because a lot of people who have covered the White House have expressed frustration that they're being fed a daily diet of pap, but it is up to these reporters to do their own enterprise reporting in the same way that reporters in the state capitol have to dig out stuff, and they're not just supposed to be taking press releases. And so the New York Times is now establishing a bureau with 6 reporters, the most reporters they've ever had in the White House. Politico has 7 reporters in their White House bureau. So it is a huge beat. And let's see, the Washington Post is also going to expand, growing from 4 reporters to 6, with the sense that the Trump White House will be more important to cover than ever.
I wanted to talk to you guys about that.
Okay.
And Judy.
And you guys and Judy. It's a colloquialism. Use guys, you know.
Yeah, use guys. Okay. So Trump, as we speak yesterday, brings in the head of all of the Googles and, you know, all those places, including the head of Amazon. Jeff Bezos, well, that's nice. He's coming in. They're making peace about how these major corporations are going to all be, you know, creating jobs, and they want to be assured that they can bring people in from abroad as other things on the agenda. But Bezos owns the Washington Post.
Mm-hmm.
And one can only wonder whether the tone, which has been very anti-Trump, of the Washington Post is going to change now that Bezos has a seat at that table.
Oh, I can't imagine. A, I don't think they've been anti-Trump. They've been aggressive in their reporting. And if it happens that chips have fallen to be negative,
stipulated.
So be it.
But they've been tougher than hell, and I love
them. They've been tough, absolutely. Yeah. I can't imagine. I mean, you know, Marty Baron, the editor of the Washington Post, made famous by the portrayal by Liev Schreiber in Spotlight, you know. Yeah. Marty Baron wouldn't stand for that. And Jeff Bezos is very happy. You know, his Washington Post has become profitable.
Is that right?
Yeah, this is just, they had a big announcement and says that it is profitable and growing enterprise. He did in his sort of year-end letter. And Bezos has invested $50 million into the newspaper.
Maybe that's why it's profitable.
Well, it could be.
Yeah, they're trying to grow to become a big international player, not just a Washington, D.C. newspaper.
Every day, you know, we have a program here called Roundtable in the Morning, and every day we get stuff from our head, our chief, Joe Donahue, who sends us a number of stories. Well, in the old days, it was mostly stuff from the New York Times. Now, you know, the Washington Post is right up there.
Absolutely. And it's not that the Post was an underperformer. It's just that that with the Bezos investment and Marty Baron as editor, it's become a much better, a really greater newspaper. So it's terrific to look at. And it's really good for the country. And thank God, because we're going to need it because of exactly the stuff Judy's alluding to. There is so much power the government has. And so much of it is going to be hidden, it seems, in the Trump administration.
Sure.
Not that it's been golden and visible in the Obama administration.
Exactly.
Well, you guys wrote, Rex, a really gutsy editorial on Trump recently. Could you tell us about it?
Well, depending upon when people hear this, I know some radio stations across the country play this later, but we are speaking before the meeting of the Electoral College in the 50 states, and our advice to the electors is to not support Donald Trump. This, of course, doesn't matter in New York State, where the electors are pledged to Hillary Clinton, but if you're in Pennsylvania or Michigan or Texas or any of the states that went for Donald Trump, you're listed as being pledged, and it's a remarkable thing to think about an elector not voting for the person that they are pledged to support. But
in some states, it's even against the law.
I suppose that's true. But there are enough states where that's not the case. And if only 37 of the electors peel off and don't vote for Trump, if there nobody has a majority, it plunges the race into the House of Representatives, and the House will elect a president, whomever they wish. And this has happened before in U.S. history. 1824 is the last time that they had to actually select somebody else. But it has happened. Now, actually, that's not true. The Rutherford B. Hayes, Samuel Tilden went to the House of Representatives also by 1876. But we don't do this lightly. But when you look at the fact that we don't know, for example, it is entirely possible that on the day he takes the oath of office, Donald Trump will be committing an impeachable offense by having holdings that could benefit him, foreign holdings in particular.
And local holdings. I mean, he's going to own that post office. And
yes.
That's a very interesting one.
In contravention of the law, as explained in the two of the Federalist Papers by Alexander Hamilton, Electoral College was set up specifically to allow for this sort of a provision.
And that's, of course, before we knew about political parties.
And what was the reader reaction to the editorial?
Well, as we speak, it's quite mixed. I mean, I've gotten a lot of emails and messages from folks who are very much very happy about it. And because it was posted...
Including me, by the way.
Well, thank you. Very nice. And because it was posted by WAMC's Joe Donahue the night before it was published, a lot of the listeners of WAMC have been very complimentary. At the same time, I got an email this morning from a guy who writes me all the time. I'm sure you have, you both have these, who said to me, Rex, you really need psychiatric help.
I get that a lot.
Yeah. Well, there's more.
Well, okay. I mean, the problem, I know, Rex, thank you for
sorry.
That. But the problem, of course, is that when you go out on a ledge like that,
yeah.
I've been saying lately, and I think it bears some watching. I hope it doesn't happen. That, you know, this president really defied all tradition by saying, this coming president, by saying that the election was going to be rigged. But it wasn't rigged after he won.
Yeah.
Now he's appointed several generals to his cabinet. I think we're up to five or six. And so think about that. One and one makes two. You get a lot of generals in your cabinet. You say elections are rigged. Now let's just say in 2020... And this is why I think editorial boards are important, because they got to look at this kind of stuff. In 2020, he may say, I don't like the numbers, these polling numbers. I think this election's going to be rigged. Therefore, there's not going to be any election. Generals, come out and do your thing.
This has happened in other countries. And
exactly.
There's no reason for us to think it couldn't happen here.
Except you should see my mail.
My editorial board colleague, my editorial board colleague, Harry Rosenfeld, who was a predecessor of mine, served 16 years as editor of the Times Union. Harry was persuasive in arguing in our editorial board conversations about this. Harry was born in Germany during the rise of Adolf Hitler. And it is a significant point that he has seen people come to power who have taken over from what had been a democratic institution.
Exactly.
You know, but it's disheartening because nearly every single newspaper in the entire country did not endorse Donald Trump, but still he was elected president. And it makes you wonder what the value of the editorials are. At least you're saying it, but whether or not people are reading it is the other.
Yeah, I
point.
Don't think we...
Did Pravda endorse?
What?
Sorry? Pravda.
Did Pravda endorse?
Pravda's owners seem to have endorsed Mr. Trump, and that seems to have had more impact than all the newspapers in America. We don't know how much impact, actually, the Russian meddling had, but it is certainly worth inquiring, and it does raise questions. I mean, I think the general who is most problematic in the Trump administration, actually, is the National Security Advisor designate, who has passed along fake news.
His son was disqualified for passing along
absolutely.
Fake news.
Absolutely.
So now a fake newser is going to be in the cabinet. And we don't really know. I mean, everything we've seen up to now has been before the guy becomes president. Once he gets his hands on the locus of power, then we'll see what happens.
That's
right?
Exactly right. I mean, it's one thing for you to have a candidate for president who generates fake news himself. You know, his support for the birther movement was absolutely outrageous, because we know it wasn't true, and Mr. Trump supported it. But now he's going to have power and his finger on the nuclear trigger. And I think our editorial board concluded that if we don't speak up now, when do you?
So, well, we don't know how far this guy is going to go. When he said that time, I'll never forget it, let that guy go. He was making, there was a protest. Okay, just ask him to leave. They say, no, beat him up. Well, that's very reminiscent of what Harry was telling your editorial board.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, Salon.com has come out with a new tool in which you identify fake news and are able to flag it for the rest of the world. I mean, nowadays what we can do is when you see something that's fake, that you identify it to your friends on Facebook or on Twitter. Salon has come up with this new tool, and it's an extension, and they work to verify whether something's true or false. They do the legwork, and then they go out there on the web and they help flag these things to, you know, you've got to stop at some place. You know, it's like throwing the starfish back in the sea. At least you can do one.
Throwing the what back in the sea?
The starfish, you know the story.
I thought you said, so the sausage.
It's a great metaphor, yeah.
Back in the sea, yeah. I wondered about that
You know, there are a million on the, but you can't throw them all back. Well, at least you can throw one back. And so you got to start nibbling away at this problem.
Yeah. You know, I think that's a great notion that they're taking some responsibility for the fake news. I wish Facebook would be more aggressive progressive in that. Two, Facebook still puts forth what I think is a fake argument that they are just a pass-along. They're just a vehicle. They have no editorial responsibility. But more people get their news from Facebook than anywhere else. And they shouldn't be continuing to evade responsibility for the quality of the content.
I see your point.
So, by the way, speaking of supporters of Donald Trump, Roger Ailes is selling his newspapers in Putnam County, New York, down in the Hudson Valley.
Isn't that good news?
The Putnam County News and Recorder and the Putnam County Courier are being sold to their editor-in-chief. So this is just a little item that is of local interest, I suppose, to the folks in Putnam County. But when you've got a media mega chief, what would you call Roger Ailes' role?
You know, he certainly doesn't need any money.
I would call him disgraced.
Well, there is something of that. It is quite interesting that the one person who has emerged from this campaign stronger in the media is Megyn Kelly.
Sure.
The Fox News host who has really stood up and been brave and bold.
Brave and bold. I love bold because it comes out of religious schools, you know.
No.
Don't be bold. Don't be bold. You hear that a lot.
She did have that one softball interview with Trump on her primetime special, but she seems to have come around.
But she stood up to him about his sexual advances, didn't she?
Not in that
She stood up to Ailes about his sexual advances.
Trump. She asked
Trump about. Are you talking about in the special?
Did she?
No, I was talking about Ailes and Megan.
Yes, mm-hmm. She did indeed stand up to him. But I think in terms of her broadcasting, I think she has become a well-respected professional, except when she's on primetime. Just saying.
Have you ever had to stand up to a boss?
That's part of what I do.
No, I think you mean for
sexual harassment?
Yeah.
No. Wow. For a boss?
I'm just interested because, you know, every time I get a chance to ask a question to somebody, I just ask it because it's there.
It doesn't hurt to ask. Actually, there's a good lesson in that for young journalists. Listen to Alan's interviews, and sometimes the best questions are just the simple ones that kind of come along.
Batting it away every other place all the time, but not bosses. My bosses have been good.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, that's a good thing because you're still working for the company.
Yeah,
so it would be bad to say, no, I just kind of let it slide. You know, I think there is. No, it's a stupid thing. I was going to say, I think there might be less of that in the newspaper industry. I'm sure that's not true.
I don't know. I think today there is.
Oh, yeah. I think there's less of it, period.
I guess that's true. But
I mean, because, the price that people pay for sexual harassment in a workplace can be extraordinary. You can be out on your geek, on your yes, very easily.
I just think that there's a level of professionalism in the newsroom now in terms of this treatment of the sexes that wasn't there 35 or 40 years ago.
And the other thing, too, is that in the news business, if there is that kind of activity, understand that the people who might be victims tend to be folks who are professionally obligated to tell what's going on. And so there has to be kind of a little bit more visibility, you would think, in journalism than there is in other forms. Anyway, we're at the end of another week.
We're getting a lot of mail. I'm not kidding. We're getting a lot of mail saying this should be an hour long.
Well, but here's a guy, Alan Insocrates, says no. He says, at times you talk about making an hour. Please do not do that. He says, 30 minutes is the perfect amount of time for what you cover. You are organized with a list of time. We're organized. So anyway.
Until we get in the room, we're organized.
Yeah.
Well, time flies when I'm with you two.
Oh, thanks.
Judy.
Judy Patrick, editor of the Daily Gazette, here today with Dr. Alan Shartok, the CEO of Northeast Public Radio, and I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union. We're grateful to our producer, David Gustina, and to all of you for joining us this week on The Media Project.
They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ding-a-ling-ling, city desk. Pull the press. Extra, read all about it. It's a mess meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press. Now, you remember Mrs. Sadie Smuggery. She wanted money to buy a new fur coat. To get insurance, she employed skullduggery. She up and cut her husband's only throat. She chopped him into fragments, she stuffed him in a trunk. She shipped it all back yonder to her uncle in Podunk. Now newspapermen meet such interesting people. It must have startled poor old Sadie's aunt. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, city desk. Hold the press, extra, extra, read all about it. It's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, city desk. Pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it. It's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful.